Okay. All right. Everybody at once yell out something topical.
Screech.
Screech? Is that what I heard? Screech, like the character from... What'd you say? Cream? Topical cream. She's good. Topical cream. Did you learn that at the University of Chicago? She's got a big shirt that says that. cream has been in the news, though. Like, no joke. It is... honestly, people are kind of divided on the issue. They're a little bit half and half. Yes! Yes! I got the whole crowd, and then I lost them, and then I lost them. Damn. Oh, no. He's onto the cream jokes. Okay. This one's for all y'all. Anybody out there feeling creamy? Y'all feeling creamy right now? It's soup weather, baby. what do you like most about cream? How smooth and buttery it is. Nice. Okay. Well, that probably leads us to this next jam, which is kind of smooth and buttery, baby. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right, baby. This is smooth and buttery if you're into that shit.
That's how much I like it, baby. Oh.
baby girl, give me that.
Smooth and buttery, baby, so smooth and buttery.
All right, we got this. Wait, one more quick one. Sorry. All right, this one. One more quick.
Hey, it's Christopher from the Paper Machete. And that was our friend Dylan Carey rocking the Green Mill in the Before Times with a creamy, buttery, improvised song that seemed like the right way to say Happy Holidays. This is obviously as unfun a holiday season as most of us can remember. But on the bright side, the president is on a criminal pardoning spree and he still hasn't conceded losing the election. So, you know, what's not to love? That said, we still wanted to bring you a little special holiday machete love, and we're going to do our darndest to warm your cockles. So here with a special treat from us to you is Bethany Thomas.
People come and go, forget to close the door. They leave their stains and cigarette butts trampled on the floor. And when they do, remember me, some of them are old. And some of them are new, and some of them will turn up when you least expect them to. And when they do, remember me, Lucy, you're my girl.
That was Bethany Thomas, accompanied by John Szymanski and Patrick Martin. That was recorded at the Green Mill in January of 2018. You're listening to the Paper Machete 2020 Thanksgiving Audio Magazine. I'll never completely understand why, but thank you. My name is Christopher. We're releasing this on Thursday, November 26, 2020, but we're starting this week very specifically on Tuesday, November 18th, 1941. Tuesday night, to be exact. Tuesday nights in America prior to the Great Depression probably weren't too special in most of the country anyway. But in the filthy, despairing 1930s, when Tuesday nights should have been especially bleak, there was one new thing that gave Tuesday nights a kind of magical importance. Even a plurality of po-folk had radios by the 1930s, and by the mid-30s, a new American art form had sort of crystallized in thin air, in homes and storefronts, diners, wherever there were radios and anybody could listen. There was this new collective national audio mirage forming that we now know as the situation comedy. They were 30 minutes. They tracked the weekly fictional adventures of characters high, low, and middle class, and you could only tell who everybody was by what they sounded like. And the royalty of the radio sitcom Middle Class was Fibber McGee and Molly, who were the Midwest comic toast of Tuesday nights for literally two decades, starting in the mid-30s. Fibber McGee and Molly lived in a highly fantasized version of Peoria, Illinois. Real-life Peoria natives Jim and Marion Jordan met at choir practice at St. John's and shared an irrepressible love of performance and entertaining. And though they struggled to take hold as a vaudeville act in the Midwest, while visiting relatives in Chicago in the late 20s, they were introduced to these novelty electric boxes that brought live comedy sketches from a local station into your house. In short, visiting small fry down on his luck vaudevillian, Jim Jordan listened to a local Chicago comedy show on the radio and immediately looked up and told his cohorts, "They were terrible. We can do much better than that." And he was right. After a successful tryout, Jim and Marion Jordan's first show on Chicago airwaves, semi-based on comic strip characters, was just a 5-minute segment. But it soon expanded to 15 minutes, and eventually a full half hour with fully fleshed out, relatable but zany domestic characters. Fibber McGee and Molly were slightly Irish brogued, pleasantly harried suburban folks who, by virtue of their writer, Don Quinn, were supplied with some of the first, best, and longest running wacky neighbor hijinks in the history of this genre. Fibber and Molly lived at 79 Wistful Vista, an address a majority of Americans knew by heart during this period, so widely beloved was this show. And there was a constant caravan of characters who just found occasion to drop by like assholes. A universal situation, equally relatable to potential listeners in the Bronx or Tulsa. But their references and their mores were decidedly upper Midwestern. And they had an energy I'd compare to a much more squeaky clean and, forgive me, lace curtain Irish version of Roseanne Barr's pre-Kamikaze Connor family. Homely and happy and mutually sarcastic, the show usually involved Fibber's harebrained, ornery schemes and his wife Molly making lots of salty wisecracks about them. America loved Fibber McGee and Molly, and especially their signature recurring sonic bit. A weekly build-up to Fibber innocently opening the hall closet to grab something while Molly desperately implores him not to.
My good ones are all in... Whoops, I knocked the lamp over. Don't you worry, baby, I'll get the hang of it. Hey, where's Lena with that hot water bottle? Don't she know where we keep it?
Do you?
No, I don't. Oh, yes, I do, too. It's right here in the hall closet.
No, McGee, that's one of the things I have to clean out when I...
As soon as he opens it, of course, all of its contents come spilling out in a cacophonous avalanche of carefully calibrated Foley artist debris. This might sound strange, but for about a decade, Fibber McGee's Weekly Closet Explosion was one of the most comforting, unifying circadian sounds in the American psyche. It was an audio explosion executed like Swiss clockwork, sacred like cathedral bells. Now, the format of the sitcom was so simple and nascent in these days that a common storytelling device was a narrator setting up the plot with a sincere, essentially topic sentence-like summary right at the top of the episode. 3 weeks before the attacks on Pearl Harbor, here's what devoted Fibber McGee and Molly fans heard around the country on that pre-Thanksgiving show.
Have you ever stood in your front door for half an hour saying goodbye to a visitor who wouldn't go home? Exasperating, isn't it? Well, here at 79 Wistful Vista, with his large feet blotting out the welcome on the mat, we find His Honor Mayor LaTrivia, who seems to regret leaving Fibber McGee and Molly.
In the segment we're about to hear, Mayor LaTrivia, the bloviating civic leader of Peoria who's always dropping by, in this episode, where the whole plot is basically about his refusal to take the hint and go home, another denizen of the neighborhood, Mrs. Abigail Uppington, a snooty society dowager, barges in when she realizes the mayor is there and she can corner him and pitch him on a harebrained charity project she's spearheading with some other country club lady types.
You have a visitor, Mrs. McGee. A lady is coming up the walk.
Ladies coming up?
No. Uh-oh.
It's Mrs. Uppington.
Mrs. Uppington?
Yes, you remember. She's one of our social leaders. Yes. With a family tree that would make a giant redwood look like a sapling.
And not a good-looking limb on the whole...
McGee.
Oh, hi, Uppy.
How do you do, Mr. McGee? And Mrs. McGee.
Hello, Abigail.
Nice to see you again, Mrs. Uppington.
I saw your automobile out in front, Your Honor, and thought I might speak to you for a moment. Am I interrupting?
Oh, no. The mayor was just leaving, Uppy. 3 hours later, and you probably would have missed him.
Not that we would like to have him spend the rest of the evening with us, what there is of it.
What was it you wished to consult me about, Mrs. Uppington?
Your Honor, the ladies' club, of which I am temporarily a chairwoman...
Here, woman, have a chair.
Temporarily.
Thank you, no. Our club, Your Honor, has passed a resolution demanding that the city council supply heated water for the horse trough on the east side of City Hall Square. We consider it cruel and inhuman to let those poor animals drink half-frozen water all winter.
Well, that's a great idea, Uppy. I think they ought to have a box of Kleenex there, too. So they can wipe their faces. Mm. Ever notice how they kind of drip all over their puss after they have
McGee? McGee, Mrs. Uppington is serious.
How can you tell?
By the way, she sticks out her chin.
Which one? The top one?
No.
Why don't you girls get busy and knit some silencers for our manhole covers?
Apologies for that sexist punchline, but it seemed worth sharing somehow. So the production of Fibber McGee and Molly was very businesslike. After the show aired on Tuesday nights, Jim Jordan, who played Fibber, insisted everybody associated with the show take a strict 2 days off. This was considered sacrosanct self-care. The script pitches happened on Friday mornings. The first drafts were ready for a table read on Sunday night, which means a first draft was in the hopper and ready to go when the news of the attack on Pearl Harbor flooded the airwaves. And within 48 hours, a stunned, literally shell-shocked America, braced with what we would think of as 9/11 fear, they turned their radio dial to the fictional, reliable, folksy Midwesterners who had made Tuesday nights in America uniformly special. And first, they were greeted with this.
NBC will be on the air with the latest war news at the beginning of every program day and night. The British radio heard by NBC reports that the Sultan of one of the little Malay states has handed control of his country right over to the British to make it easier to repel the Japanese. a British advisor will sit with the Sultan of Kelantan from now until the war is all over. The United Press from New York. The United States has banned Germans, Austrians...
After about 90 seconds of headlines from around the world, listeners heard the usual introduction.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with songs by Martha Tilton and the King's Men, and music by Billy Mills. The show opens with Don't Ever Leave Me.
And it's the regular shtick, the regular word from the regular sponsor, the regular credits and buoyant orchestra, regularly scheduled, tightly oiled, real-time, disposable Americana radio comfort food. And then...
We have just received this message for our listeners in a telegram from the president of S.C. Johnson & Son, Incorporated, our sponsor. In these serious days, there can be no division of opinion. The United States is at war. We are all ready and eager to do our part. The makers of Johnson's Wax and Glow Coat believe it is in the public interest to continue programs as entertaining as Fibber McGee and Molly. They have a place in national morale. So you can continue to hear Fibber McGee and Molly and still be in touch with latest developments. We have asked the National Broadcasting Company to feel free at any time to cut into our programs with important news flashes and announcements. Signed, H.F. Johnson, Jr.
Then they do a sitcom. A regular sitcom. Mrs. Uppington comes back this week. She does something super uppity. Martha Tilton's back this week, belting out something super brassy. Over 1 million Americans are going to die in a war we've just been coerced into, but nobody knows that yet, not tonight. Tonight we bring you Fibber McGee and Molly for the national morale. Tonight we bring you continuity. America is under deliberate military attack, and yet Fibber McGee's closet is dependably as disorderly as usual. If you can hear my voice, it's Thanksgiving of 2020, and national continuity has gone the way of satire and journalism and the dodo bird. We have a holiday episode today with a little new but mostly vintage live machete content, as it were, from the olden times of permissibly crowded non-deadly bar rooms. It's a fun show, both nostalgic and contemporary. And it's a way of saying how much we miss seeing you and making comedy and music with and for all of you. If you're the kind of person who could extract any morale from our silly matinee variety show, this episode is for you. And you know what? Let's switch up the mood a little bit now and kick off this special with some stand-up comedy. About a year ago right now, a Chicago native comedian was home from LA. This really feels like a lifetime ago. But here's what drunken Saturday afternoon comedy sounded like last November. This is Clark Jones.
I don't have the energy in me to argue with anybody anymore. I am a Bernie bro. And yeah, you could like it, you could not like it. I'm just really excited for y'all to see what we look like. We're not all white guys named Chad. Some Bernie bros are black dudes from the south side of Chicago with D'Angelo braids. That's how we're very diverse. Some of us dance to house music. Like we're a weird group. I don't know. I mean, I do plan to vote for anybody running against Trump. I do. But that don't stop the jokes, right? Like, Bernie got a problem with black people, and I know what it is. It's fixable. This is a very special match for any white dudes who date interracially. You want to date Mary Lee, shoot your shot after the show. Here's the thing. The problem with Bernie and black people is Bernie's a little too disheveled. White man. You cannot meet black people for the first time wearing a Burlington Coat Factory suit. We're not gonna respect it. Like, we hate privilege unless we can use it for our benefit. Like, comb, some durag, something. Look like you can get a bill passed, and then we'll fuck with you. Like, we only hate privilege when we can't use it. Some people still in the tank for Joe Biden. And here's the problem with Joe. This is exactly what it is. I'm gonna break it down. Joe Biden is a plus one at a party who stayed after the person who brought him left. Like, bro, where the fuck have you been? Oh man, I went to the bathroom. I called Pink out real quick, but I want to run the aux cord now. Like, no, nigga, like, we needed you in 2016. We've been listening to Hoobastank for 3 straight years. Like, what the fuck? We thought you left with the Baracks. Timing is everything. I'm not innocent. As a comedian, sometimes, you know, you got to do things to stay relevant, stay in the public eye. And I recently did a thing for the NFL on Fox. Okay. I know. I haven't been able to tell anybody because it's the NFL on Fox, right? That's like 0-2. I can't tell none of my woke friends. That's like telling my Jewish friends, yo, I just did this Hitler thing on Al Jazeera. Like, share, comment. And then they go like, nah, we can't really fuck with either one of those. Any Jewish people in the room? Anybody Jewish? Okay, this is what I know, that's perfect. Because you know why? This is why I love my Jewish friends, because there are more Jewish people in the room, but y'all learned y'all lesson about identifying yourselves. Just because the crazy man asked, where the Jews at? And y'all like, wait. Shh, wait. Put that bagel down. Put it down. Let's see where he goes with this first. Anybody Irish background in the room? Yeah. Y'all survived the potato famine, fam. Yeah. Motherfuckers eat potatoes every day in Ireland. And then they ran out. The constable, whoever the fuck runs Ireland, was like, no more potatoes. Niggas is eating hash browns every day. Ran out of potatoes and motherfuckers died. But somebody in your family was like, what about squash? And you survived. All you need is squash and Jameson. No, it's great. I love talking to Native American people. They keep me humble. Native American people are the only group of people that when I complain about how hard it is to be black in America, they're the only group of people that can tell me, shut the fuck up, man. Ain't nobody trying to hear that shit. It's a pipeline through my asshole right now. And you talking about the police. I'm like, all right, touche. That's French, I think. Here's what I gotta say to all my Latinos, though, like, cause I lived in New York and Latinos, Latinx, whatever, y'all say nigga a lot, right? And look, that's true, right? It's true. Here's my problem. It's not so much that you say it, but like, you gotta be a nigga when the police show up too. Like, you can't just, it's not a part-time job. I've been sold out many times. Soon as 12 show up, y'all like, huh, no say. No, you say nigga, you just said it. And I'm like, I'm in the back seat just shaking my knuckle at Jose. You gotta be a nigga all the time. That's all I'm saying. Not just on Spotify. You gotta be a nigga.
That was Clark Jones. His podcast is called Classic Black Dude. Check it out. Well, this being the holidays, we should talk food. Of course, the politics of meat have long been part of Paper Machete. Earlier this year, we featured, shortly before the shutdown, a response to Joaquin Phoenix's pro-vegan Oscar acceptance speech. Here now, with that response, is cow number 420.
Boo! Hello! That's what you expect, right? As a move from me? Listen. Most people assume my name is Bessie. It's not. It's cow number 420, according to the ear tag that I ripped out on my way here. So that's what we're working with. Go ahead and laugh about it. I'm just glad to be in a city that appreciates grass as much as I do. Hey! Can't believe I covered all four of my nipples for this. All right, listen, let's get down to business. This little day drinking shindig for sad, struggling artists, this is small potatoes for me. Do you know I used to be an actress? You might remember me from hits like Babe, Pig in the City, or Twister, where I did my own stunts. But Hollywood is a tough place for a gal who weighs 1,500 pounds. And most of the time when an actress begins to age, she starts a makeup line or a goop lab. But me, I got sent to the part of Indiana where people buy all their clothes at the Cracker Barrel gift shop. Do you know this part? Like the part where people are unconcerned with politics because they still believe that the rapture is gonna come? That's where I live! I'm working for the man at Fair Oaks Farm, getting artificially inseminated every year like some kind of rich lesbian. So that I can keep making your milk. I've spent most of my adult life pregnant, hanging around other cows who are pregnant by the same bull like we're sister wives, just so you kinky freaks can drink the pus that gets sucked out of my nipples with a machine. If you put milk in your cereal, quit lying to yourself and make a FetLife profile. You're an adult baby, there are groups for it. Do you know how they get the bull semen for the job? A human man jerks off a bull with what's basically a cow hole-sized fleshlight and squirts the semen in us with a cow hole-sized squirt gun made out of stainless steel. Do you know how long it's been since I've had actual sex? The closest I'll ever get to getting laid is if one day I become a leather couch that you and your Tinder date fuck on. Think about it. Every time you fuck on a leather couch, it's a three-way with you and your sweetie and a dead cow. Maybe you're gonna reconsider some of your Crate and Barrel purchases after this. But listen, I'm not the only one who knows that my life sucks. Animal rights activists have been calling for an end to the dairy industry for years. And this week, at the Oscars, my plight finally became part of mainstream conversation. But the guy who chose to spend his acceptance speech talking about animal liberation was Joaquin Phoenix. A shifty-eyed, sweaty, oddly shaped man with a resting face of someone who once drowned a kitten. Should this be the face of veganism? I should mention, of course, that Joaquin won an Oscar for Best Actor in the movie The Joker, a spectacle of unrelenting nihilism following a failed stand-up comedian who goes on a killing spree and becomes the patron saint of incels. The Joker was too depressing for me, and I live on a factory farm. America won't listen to a man who says that all injustice, including injustice against animals, is interconnected when the messenger looks like a serial killer and also played one in a movie. Also, I would like to take this opportunity to say that his message about interconnectedness is a little bit inaccurate because I can acknowledge that unlike other oppressed groups in America, I am not supposed to exist. Do you understand? Like, my kind used to be feral, and then we were domesticated to be used as currency and food, and you made sure the strong ones died and bred the slowest, fattest heifers to quench your appetites. You made me for your own selfish purposes the same way you made pugs, you fucking idiots! I don't want to be here. The only way I can exact revenge on you is if I slowly contribute to climate change by blasting your ozone with my farts until we all die. So this week I've been asking myself, if there were another celebrity who could give a speech about shutting down the dairy industry at a future awards show, who would America actually listen to? It can't be Scarlett Johansson. We all know that if ScarJo made a movie about the horrors of the dairy industry, she would insist on playing the lead cow. It's not her, y'all. It's Laura Dern. Laura Dern! Hot enough for straight men, butch enough in Jurassic Park for bicurious women. She has the hippy-dippy vegan look of someone who collects river stones and sells them on Etsy. She was the saving grace of the movie Marriage Story, another Oscar-nominated film that was tedious and soul-sucking, and indeed did star Scarlett Johansson, like everything else. But Laura stole the whole damn film. But Laura Dern lives in L.A., and I can only get as far as Chicago before old McDonald catches me. So here's my pitch. You're a bunch of sad theater actors, right? I'm sure you tell all your dates you know someone who knows someone who knows someone who knows Laura Dern. That might be true. So if you could get this message to her, please tell Laura Dern. Go vegan, Laura Dern! And spread the good word before Joaquin gets another opportunity to point his scary cult leader eyes at a camera. The rest of you can switch to oat milk. Now don't push me on my way out, I can't get up.
Cow number 420 was created and played for the machete by the one and only Malik White. At the end of this week, Advent kicks off. This time last year, we hosted a secular sermon on this topic by an actual person of the cloth. This is Pastor Rebecca Anderson.
Happy New Year, motherfuckers! Happy New Year! Get out your Advent calendars. Get ready to light up those Advent candles on your wreath. Out with the old, in with the new. As you know and are all tracking, today is the last day of the liturgical calendar. The liturgical calendar is that Christian calendar that marks the annual seasons and cycles of church life and holidays. Today's the last day of the church year. Tomorrow is the first day of the next church year. You all get it, you understand. It's happening not because it's December 1st, but because it's the first Sunday of Advent, which is the first Sunday. Anyway, let's not get into the specifics, all right? What you need to know is that at midnight tonight, the liturgical calendar turns over to the beginning of a new year, the beginning of a new Advent. That's the 4 weeks leading up to Christmas. Maybe when you were a kid, you had one of those little paper calendars, you know, with little perforated doors. You open them up, 1 to 25. All through December, you got a little Bible verse if you were me. You got a little cute mouse looking at something if you were you. Maybe you had like a wreath at home with four candles on it. You got to light one each Sunday. That's a deep cut, but maybe you did. I don't know who you are. I was a pastor's kid. I had the wreath and the calendar, not to brag. For most of us, then, now, it means nothing. Or maybe you're into that thing where you buy like a chocolate Advent calendar or a whiskey Advent calendar. To you, I say namaste. So at midnight tonight, when the calendar flips back to the beginning, so it's more of a circle than a line, really, when we flip back to the beginning, to Advent, what we're changing from is called ordinary time. And ordinary time is this long green stretch on the liturgical calendar, uninterrupted by feasts like Easter or fasts like Lent. It's a long, continuous string of normal days, unbroken by celebration or lament. It's unbroken by, like, communal celebration or lament. There's always the personal kind. Anyway, a couple of things you should know about me so you can relax. Like Christopher said, I really am a pastor, regular ordained, not online. I worked really hard. I took out a lot of loans. Yes, I do know about the Universal Life Church. I'm glad you officiated your sister's wedding. Two, maybe more importantly, I don't care if you're a Christian and I don't want to convert you. Three, if someone Christian was shitty to you or did some kind of violence to you, I'm genuinely sorry, for real. A little more background, I don't care about the war on Christmas, mostly because it's fake. I don't care when people start listening to Christmas music because life is hard, and if that shit cheers you up, go for it. I also don't care if you hate Christmas music and I don't want to talk with you about it. Sorry. I mean, I respect it, but like, whatever. And I also don't really care about the liturgical calendar, like this whole Advent thing. And maybe that seems obvious to you, like who does care about the liturgical calendar? But as someone who spends a lot of time with other clergy, I have to tell you that there are a whole lot of people who will throw down over the liturgical calendar, like on their Facebook pages or over styrofoam cups of shitty coffee with non-dairy creamer, which powdered creamer really fails the gospel. But anyway, those people can tell you exactly why the calendar is so important. They will tell you why you should not sing Christmas songs until Christmas Day, and then why you should sing them through Epiphany when everyone is already sick of Christmas. They'll tell you why Advent is a period of waiting and hopeful expectation and preparation for Christmas, and how it's completely ruined if you sing Joy to the World like a second too early. They'll tell you how Advent pushes back against the consumerism of Christmas in the US, and I agree with that one, actually. I care about that. So a few weeks ago, I was sitting with some clergy, and they got really, really cranked up over a plan to reclaim an old tradition of Advent. A long time ago, like, seriously, 1,600 years ago, Advent lasted 6 weeks instead of four. And after the clergy meeting, there were a bunch of excited emails about how they were going to take up the extra 2 weeks and, like, reconnect with our roots. And I was like, you guys, seriously, that was the end of the sixth century. Like, the ship has sailed. It's over. Advent had just started, basically, like, maybe in the fourth century, or at least by then. Like, everything else in the calendar, it started locally. It was based on what people were already doing and cared about. And it was churches in Spain and Milan that first got excited about it. And then in France, they adopted the full six-week Advent at the end of the fifth century by the Council of Mâcon. Advent wasn't a cozy time of decorations and candle lighting. It was a fast, like a whole second Lent. Some people think, actually, that like Lent, it was a fast to get people through a lean time with dignity. So here's the thing, or a thing. By a lot of measures, Christianity has been on a long downward trajectory ever since the Roman government got involved. Like, the last time Christianity was a persecuted grassroots movement was before the year 312, which is when Emperor Constantine converted, mostly because of his mother, Helena. Before 312, everyone knew that Christianity was for losers, and not losers like Christians are losers now, like powerful bully asshole losers, but like regular powerless losers, the kind that anyone would recognize as losers, like vulnerable losers who were hunted and killed for sport. But by the time that the liturgical calendar had started to come together, by like the mid-300s, Christianity was already in the hands of the powerful, and the Christian calendar was part of a plan truly for revitalizing the city of Jerusalem by attracting more tourists in the form of pilgrims, like encouraging them to celebrate religious holidays by visiting certain holy spots and spending their tourist Roman currency there. Advent, like everything else in the calendar, is made up, or like at least arbitrary, based on what people needed and what some city planner cum theologian wanted for Jerusalem's budget fiscal year 350 ACE. What's not made up, and don't worry if you're like stealing yourself for some kind of truth claim, relax. What's not made up is that life happens in cycles. You know, our lives and every year full of feast and fast and celebrations and lament and many, many totally ordinary days. So much ordinary time. If Advent, like everything else, is made up, it is. And we get to take what we want and shake off the rest like so many extra weeks of fasting, looking at you, Pope Gregory the Great. Then here's what I want from Advent. I want the scary shit, because there is some scary shit. There are these readings that the liturgy queens want us to stick to before we get to the cozy ones about the baby. I want the readings about John the Baptist hissing at religious leaders that they're a brood of vipers gathered there praying around the president, or whatever, made up example. I want the madman in the wilderness screaming that the axe is at the root of the tree already to take down or take out whatever claims to be good but's evil, like laws claiming to protect life but stripping people of dignity and choice and bodily autonomy. Woo. I want signs that something new and beautiful is about to happen just when it feels the most unlikely and necessary. Deserts in bloom and rich sent away hungry. I want consumerism fucking gouged, not scaled back, not toned down. I want it burned down in love. I want
want not just the vulnerable, not just the losers, to notice that ordinary time is coming to a fucking close. I guess I'd care about some of the liturgical calendar. So anyway, I thought we could practice tonight. I mean, interfaith, atheist, ecumenical, whatever. Like, no pressure. Like I said, not converting people. You know, as the old liturgical year passes away at midnight, as you hang up your Advent calendars and put on your Council of Mekong sweaters and get ready to light that first Advent candle, remember, there are signs that shit is about to burn down, that it needs burning down. There are signs that the old ways are coming to an end, and it's time, again, to overthrow the powerful and protect the vulnerable. It's time for those who've wielded religion and fear of all kinds to have their swords beaten into plowshares, to make sure that no one has to fast to make ends meet. Woo. Out with the old, in with the new. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Happy New Year, motherfuckers. Ordinary time is done!
Pastor Rebecca Anderson is the founder of Gilead Church. So a lot of us won't see our crazy uncles in person this year. So this bit is from the craziest uncle in the Machete universe. It's from last September when we asked him to recap one of the Democratic debates, the jokes from which are still highly applicable. Here's my Republican Uncle Phil.
Chris's Uncle Phil, but you just call me Phil. I don't claim that side of the family. Just call me Phil, Chris. Now, I'm a mystery, a walking dichotomy. I am a black Mormon. I'm rare. I'm also a black Republican, number 122. There's only 183 of us. It's getting smaller. Now, Phil is a man of mystery and opinions. You're about to hear a few of them. A couple of days ago, Chris asked me, he said, will you talk about the Democratic debate? I said, Chris, put the lotion in the basket. Chris wanted a Republican perspective, and I suspect I'm the only Republican Chris knows. Dean, would you give me some gin? Thank you, Dean. I like to have, you know, enough gin to put in my couch cushions. I just keep it there for emergencies, my couch gin. So anyway, I jotted down a few quick thoughts about the debate. The first thing, it bothered me the whole debate, and that was Bernie. Bernie, we know you wrote the damn bill. Can you clear your damn throat? I mean, his vocal quality was biblical. It had a plague of frogs. It was gross. Kamala Harris. Oh, Kamala. She fine. Oh, Kamala, I would vote for you to come over to my crib. Senator, I will show you what a real filibuster is. I can only assume that Kamala's parents were named Cameron and Pamela, because a lot of black folks name their kids that way. Now, Kamala, she has clear policies. She got a strong demeanor. She's in control until she tells one of her terrible jokes. Then she starts laughing real crazy. She turns into Joaquin Phoenix. You don't get my vote. Sorry, Kamala. Mayor Pete. Now, Mayor Pete, he was the most intimidating MF on that MF stage. He's well-educated. Speaks 14, 15 languages. He's killed people, some of them in combat. You know how gangster you have to be an openly gay mayor in Indiana? Indiana. But the thing that's most intimidating to him, about him, is his name, Pete Buttigieg. Oh, that scares people that ain't confident about their booty. That little mayor walking around judging people's booties. Oh, it's high and tight. That's out of sight. You're doing all right. Oh, that's a fright. Look at that behind. It's mighty fine. Ooh, that's a crime. Don't waste my time. Oh, he's changing people's self-esteem one rhyme at a time. Beto. Oh, Beto. He said he's gonna get rid of people's AKs and ARs. Oh, you a Republican strategist dream. Just try it, Beto. Try to get my gun. You never find my couch AK. Oh, shit. Oh. Well, that's what the couch gin is for. Andrew Yang. Oh. You said something that really bothered me. He said, I'm Asian, so I know a lot of doctors. And I thought, what if the other candidate said some shit like that? Like Cory Booker, I'm black, so I know a lot of convicted felons. Oh, I'm Elizabeth Warren. I'm a white lady from Massachusetts, so I've slept with a lot of Kennedys. I'm Bernie Sanders. I'm old, so I know a lot of dead people. I'm Beto O'Rourke. I got a skinny neck, so I know a lot of pencils. I'm Amy Klobuchar. Pass. I'm Pete Buttigieg. Oh, I'm a gay white man, so I know a lot of rich dudes with nice apartments in Manhattan. Oh, I'm Kamala Harris. I'm a black lady, so I know a lot of people with nice hats that do this when they get mad. Oh, I'm Joe Biden. I know dead people that Bernie knows. I'm Julian Castro. I'm a dick, so I know a lot of dicks. Oh, and he is a dick. Oh, my God. I got to witness Julian Castro's political suicide. Bitch was a dick to Biden. Oh, he said, oh, you forgot what you said 2 minutes ago. You forgot what you said 2 minutes ago. You forgot. He said it four times. If he had said it once, it would have been cool. He would have scored some points. He said it four times. My man Trump, he would have said it once and then given Biden a nickname. He would have been like, oh, you forgot Sloppy Joe. Sloppy Joe. Joe Blivion, the creepy Veep. Oh. But my big takeaway from the debates, my big takeaway, the one thing that all the candidates agreed on was that Barack Obama should be running for president right now. Oh, then a Democrat could win. Oh, but I'm out of here. Putin 2020. I mean, Trump for king. No, shit. Phil is out of here. Somebody give me a ride home.
My Uncle Phil! Wow. He doesn't claim me, but I love him.
Uncle Phil is the creation of the wonderful Mr. Rick Walker. So, you know what I think is going to be kind of weirdly the same this year as it was last year? Jewish Thanksgiving. I don't know why. I just think it's probably going to be mostly like last year's Jewish Thanksgiving. I know it will be for this next performer, who last December recapped her holiday as she also addressed the executive order Trump had just signed to combat anti-Semitism. This is Rena Kalm.
Oh, shalom. I was asked to talk to you guys today about President Trump's executive order this week to either protect or endanger Jews. Who knows? Who knows? The order states that anti-Semitism would fall under civil rights protections, which kind of categorizes Judaism as a nationality. The order specifically applies to anti-Semitism on college campuses, which has been increasing for a number of reasons, but this order is not about stopping hate. It's really more of an effort to tune out the BDS protest against Israel. And the point of the order is to withhold government funding from institutions who allow these anti-Israel protests, claiming that they are anti-Semitic. Trump also signed an executive order earlier this year to protect free speech on campuses back in March. So while this recent order has a lot of Israel supporters, like my dad, very happy, both of these orders really play into exactly what a white nationalist would want. You know what? Why don't you guys try reading about it for a few days and tell me what you think happened? Because the more I dive into this internet rabbit hole, the more research I did, the more it's hard to understand. We're living in this surreal era where the endless information we've made available has made the truth itself subjective, and nothing but dollars makes sense. I'm not gonna get up here in a bar on Shabbat and pretend to be a good Jew. Where are my Jews at? Make some oys. Okay. classic comedy. I'm not observant now, but I grew up in a very religious household. Actually, it was a mixed household. I was raised Jewish and angry. I'm not a currently practicing Jew, but I'm never gonna quit because we need the numbers. I was nervous to take this on, this topic, because earlier this year, I really upset some Jews in the basement of a Maggiano's in Skokie. I did a show there and someone complained to the venue that my act was racist towards Jews. I had just done those same jokes the night before at a bigger room full of more Jews and it went very okay. Even almost good. I wasn't worried about my material, but, you know, first of all, you can't be racist towards Jews. That's why it's anti-Semitism. Second, these people complaining were out eating dinner on a Friday night, Shabbat. So the hypocrisy was as rich as the cream chicken that they were eating. And also, there's nothing more Jewish than complaining to a restaurant manager. Who's making us look bad, okay? So whatever I say or whatever you believe, I'm gonna need your support because I'm going first here and nobody wants to bomb while talking about the Middle East. As a Jew who was born in Israel and absolutely believes that the Jewish people deserve our home there, I also can't ignore the corruption or justify the treatment of the Palestinians. Some Jews won't even acknowledge them as Palestinians because they don't have a state of Palestine, because we took it. Israel really seems to keep taking more, moving the lines of their map over further and further to suit their interests, like it's a hurricane map or something. And it's like they're... It's like they're using America as their Sharpie, you know? I really wish we could all be friends, you know? Put the pal in Palestine. Stein not being like a Jewish name. Palestine. Because you know what? When it comes to the Middle East, there really are good people on both sides. It breaks my heart to see what Israel's doing. Both Israel and America have leaders right now who are so corrupt they refer to any inquiry towards them, any justice towards them as a witch hunt. Both of them say that. It's like we're living in a bizarre world where all I can do is hope for an actual witch to hunt down where all of these liars are coming from and cast a spell to rid us of the evil money and power. Speaking of money, in the same week Trump signed this order to supposedly stop anti-Semitism, he also used very problematic language to talk about the Jewish people at a speech in Florida, claiming they had no choice but to vote for him because they would never vote for a wealth tax. Listen, that line would have got him kicked out of the Maggiano's in Skokie, I promise you. Earlier this year, Representative Ilhan Omar was heavily criticized for a joke where she said Israel was all about the Benjamins. Maybe she meant Benjamin as in Netanyahu. not the Puff Daddy lyric about hundos. Can I say hundos? Did I pull that off? The main outrage in response to this comes from the danger of declaring Judaism as a nationality. I was born in Israel, but my parents are from Connecticut. I'm an American citizen, and not every Jew could even fit in Israel. It's the size of Delaware. Side note, could we maybe just, like, give them Delaware? That's my two-state solution. I was in Delaware earlier this year, and I can promise you, we will not miss it. First is the worst. I do think that anti-Semitism should fall under civil rights protection, but for that matter, so could hate crimes against any religion. It would probably make more sense and less hate to say that in our country, along with race, color, and nationality, that we also don't allow discrimination on the basis of people's religion. Reports of anti-Semitic incidents in the U.S. have surged since Trump took office, and we all remember his inability to condemn actual Nazis in Virginia. Maybe it's also hard to take any comfort in the steps taken to make all Jews claim Israel as their home, to make being Jewish a nationality, from the same president who told four congresswomen to go back to their own countries just a few months ago. Everything this president does, even in a room full of people wearing MAGA yarmulkes, yeah, seems to have a little wink to the alt-right and the evangelical Christians who see the Jewish state as a correct step towards achieving the prophecy of end times. The phrase America First was originally used in this country in the 40s by Nazi sympathizers, and now he's got a bunch of Jews saying it. It's a mind warp. He knows how to, with very small words and hands, appeal to his voters by exploiting their greatest weaknesses. My dad loves Israel, so he loves Trump. But honestly, and this is weird and hard to say, I think what my dad maybe loves the most, bear with me, is the Holocaust. Not that he likes it, not that he thinks it was a good thing that happened, but like if the Holocaust hadn't happened, I don't know what he would do with his time. I don't know what he would do all week. Running Holocaust remembrance benefits and gatherings and speeches is his main hobby. That, you know, like, it's not like it was a good thing, but he loves talking about it. You know what I mean? Like, it's conflicting inside. And also, that's not the worst thing I've said about Fred Kalm on this stage. So, I'm just saying that I really don't know if he has any other active hobbies. And it was a really fun Thanksgiving. Trying to understand our dual realities is truly surreal. So excuse me for all of my Dada issues. Okay. Thanksgiving is just an example of one of the ways we love being American. Jewish holidays are all about remembering a time someone tried to kill us, but we survived. American holidays, we get to celebrate the times we killed people and told them how they were allowed to survive. More fun and better snacks. I'm still not sure what consequences or positive changes, if any, this executive order could bring, but I will say it really confused the shit out of me to watch them lighting a menorah at the end of the signing because it just proves that nobody even knows when Hanukkah is. So, happy holidays and shalom.
That was the one and only Rena Kalm. So, are you secretly attending a Friendsgiving this year? A Friendsgiving? Right now? Like, off the grid, as you listen to this? Underground, rogue, Friendsgiving. It's cool. We won't tell anybody. And actually, we have a sketch about this very topic, Friendsgiving. Take it away.
Where have you been?
At work.
Well, what took you so long to get home?
It didn't take me long at all. Damn it, Carl! Why would I say it took you a long time if it didn't take you a long time? I get here the same time every day.
Don't you be arguing with my daughter, boy.
Mom, stay out of this!
Mm-hmm. Just letting you know I got your back. Got my pistol up in my coat, ready to shoot.
What's going on? Just go out for a smoke.
Going out for a smoke.
You are late for Friendsgiving. That's what's got me
upset. Wait. Friends what?
Friendsgiving. The day of celebration for friends.
Huh?
It's named after my mother.
I heard my name. Do I need to get my pistol?
I thought your mother's name was Sarah. It is because of my father, but her mother named her Fran. Honey, I'm really concerned about your mother's smoking. It's making her voice really deep. And I'm worried that she has a loaded weapon in our house.
Ready to shoot.
Thanks, Mom. And I'm really concerned that you forgot about Friendsgiving.
Going back out for my smoke.
All of our friends come over. We have flan. You know this. We've been doing this for 2 years now. Carl, why do you seem so distant? And it's not just today. It's been for a few weeks now. I mean, I know the holidays are here, and it's a very stressful time, but things are different.
This is all coming out of left field to me.
You're calling me crazy?
No, I'm just saying. It's left field. I didn't know where this was coming
from.
Where
the Cubs used to play, there was a mental hospital out of left field, and sometimes I could hear the crazy people.
This is nuts.
You're nuts! Oh, my fucking God. Is your mother outside shooting?
Nobody worry about nothing. Just a coyote. I scared them off.
Thanks, Mom. I really think we need to see if everybody's okay.
Carl, I need to know that we're okay.
You are always getting your priorities mixed up.
Yes, things are a little strained with us. I've had a lot on my mind, work, holidays, us, and I don't know if we are going to make it. And I don't know how to tell you that.
No.
I'm sorry.
No.
I'm really sorry.
No, just
this isn't right.
Just tell me what
this isn't
your
adding
mind.
Up. None of this is making
tell
any
me what's
sense.
On your mind. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that wasn't a dog, Carl. None of our neighbors have a dog that looks like a coyote. Mom, it's a werewolf.
Oh, you better go give her a run in now. Goddamn werewolf broke my cigarette.
Mom, thank God you're all right. I was so worried. I was ready to go get the flan.
Shoot, girl, you know it wouldn't be a Friendsgiving without werewolves.
Like you always say, stay ready to shoot. All right? I am done. I can't take this. I don't know what's going on. I've completely lost my mind. There's dogs, there's guns, there's werewolves, there's cigarettes. Someone help me understand this.
Okay. I guess it's time to come clean.
The jig is up.
You're sitting alone, Carl.
The voice is in your head.
You're alone, all alone.
Your wife?
That's you.
Your mother-in-law?
That's you.
Werewolf?
That was you.
You're about to get on a Zoom call with your parents in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Your brother and his family are at their home in Buffalo.
You're all alone. And the stress of the holidays.
Yes.
And not being able to spend them with family. And now, Carl, we're here.
No, Carl, I mean, we're here outside the front door. We all decided to hell with a Zoom call. Let's just mask up and meet him in Chicago.
I think you're dead, but somebody will call 911.
That sketch was written by Mars Timms of Pimprov, and he performed it with Greg Holloman of Strangers with Candy. And this was the Paper Machete Thanksgiving Special, produced by me, Christopher Pyatt. Our audio engineer is Jacob Serio. We are so grateful that you listened, and we wish you and yours the happiest of holidays. We're going to leave you with one more by Bethany Thomas, followed by the end of the Fibber McGee and Molly episode from the Tuesday after Pearl Harbor, which is really quite something. Thanks so much for listening, and good night, Mrs. Steinberg, wherever you are.
We're going to do a new song now that we've never played before anywhere. And it's called De-Escalator.
de-escalator. Oh, are you trying to help? De-escalator. Is it mainly yourself? Neither hero nor villain, no way. Oh, you can't walk this line forever. You can't walk this line forever. You can't walk this line forever. Quiet abstainer, when will you make your stand? Prideful disarmer, when will you play your hand? Where do you stand in the line? Whose lead did you get behind? Oh, you can't walk this line forever. You can't walk this line forever. You can't walk this line forever. De-escalator, how do you think it ends? De-escalator, how will you make amends? How can you feel for both sides? Is it 'cause you've got something to hide? Oh, you can't walk this line forever. You can't walk this line forever. This line will become the
Ladies and gentlemen, we know everyone is anxiously awaiting the words of President Roosevelt. In the meantime, the makers of Johnson's Wax have this message for you. America has answered the treacherous attack of the Japanese by declaring war to the victorious end. To ensure our victory, we must turn our dollars into guns and our dimes into bullets. Buy United States defense bonds and stamps at your bank, post office, or savings and loan association. Get them from your newspaper carrier boy or your retail dealer. If you live in Canada, buy Canadian War Savings Certificates or Victory Bonds. Don't delay. Act now.
Good night,
Al.
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax Finishes for Home and Industry, inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night. This is the National Broadcasting Company.